St. Paul's letters to the Corinthians, especially the first of the two, is a series of sermons, letters, suggestions, edicts for how a brand new church can live in the context of very different religious pluralism. Not only in Corinth are there devout Jews and a few Christians, but the main game in town is pagan idol worship. And the question that often comes about is how do religious people who are practicing in a new and different way after the manner of Christ live with and relate to practices of those whose religious faith dominates the culture? To which Paul says, in part, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. This is, in effect, an answer to the question, is it lawful for Christians to eat food offered to idols? In the context of pagan idol worship, animals are sacrificed, portions of which are used in worship, but the vast majority of the product of the sacrifice is either distributed among the people in the church or sold in the marketplace. Is it proper for a Christian to then avail oneself, if one is hungry, of food offered to idols? Paul says, concerning this, we know that all possess knowledge. If anyone imagines that he knows something but yet does not know as he ought to know, if anyone loves God, one is known by him. What does he mean by that? Paul says, but some, through being accustomed to eating food offered to idols, become a stumbling block to the weak. All things are lawful, not all things are helpful. If you're hungry and the food offered to idols is available, it's lawful to eat it. But some may consider that a stumbling block. It would be sort of like, is it lawful for a devout Jew to eat the leftovers from Christian Holy Communion? It's hard to imagine a scenario where that might take place, but that's sort of the intent of what Paul is saying. I thought you were a Jew. What are you doing eating that? And then, is it lawful for the Presbyterian minister to be boorish and disorderly at a sports bar? Probably not going to affect his salvation, but hey, wait a minute. I thought, huh? Become a stumbling block to the weak. Though all things are lawful, not all things are helpful. So my thoughts this morning revolve around in the here and now, in a church asking many of the same questions that the Christian Corinthians were asking of Paul. How do we get along? How do we relate? In a religiously pluralistic culture, in ways that are helpful. I think what is helpful, first of all, is a intentional recovery of or persistent use of civility. Got interviewed this week by both television and radio, asking the preeminent sociologist at Texas Tech University, what's the deal with these boorish fans at the A&M game? And Jeff Klotzman particularly was saying, you know, I remember when men wore coats and ties, and when they played the Spirit of Aggieland, we put our hands over our hearts. What's with these kids these days? Well, I don't know what's with them. I know what's different about communication today than it was 30, 40, maybe even 5 years ago. There's a sense of immediacy and a kind of colloquialism that goes with communication in an age of text messages and Facebook. We are redefining what it means to communicate. We are redefining the meaning of friendship, for better or for worse. I received an unsolicited email this week from a high school student in North Carolina who'd heard or read of some of our work on body art and needed to do a senior project on something, and so she was interested in tattoos, and asked for my help. That's fine. Except the email read like a text message. You know, contracted words, small I's, fragments, halfway grammatical. And I'm thinking, somebody needs to tell this young woman that an unsolicited email is, in effect, a business letter. So I politely and kindly gave her the information she wanted. And then I tried to, in a good Christian way, make that point. I never heard back. Electronic communication is less a conversation than it is an exchange of edicts, which is fine in and of itself, but I think doesn't force us to be civil. Civility in conversation, I think, is something to which we need to pay more intentional attention. One of the points I made on the radio interview was that kids aren't talking to each other in the same way that they used to. They aren't talking to their parents in the same way we used to, but neither also are politicians. And the models we have in our culture do not highlight the usefulness, the helpfulness of civility. Is it lawful to be boorish? Is it lawful to boo during the playing of an alma mater? Well, yeah, nobody's going to throw you in jail for that. It's just not helpful. What's helpful is to, especially these days, in an era where we have redefined communication and are changing the meaning of friendship, highlight the helpfulness of civility. This, I think, leads us to a broader understanding of the consequences of civility, higher levels of tolerance. Tolerance is helpful, especially tolerance in a religiously pluralistic culture. I was provoked to thought when a colleague of mine in ministry, although I don't know him, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Dallas, a 10,000-strong congregation, came out and said of Mitt Romney's religion, ostensibly in support of Rick Perry, that it's a scary little cult of some kind. Now, Rick Perry, to his credit, said, I didn't ask him to do that, and I wish he hadn't, frankly. I wish he hadn't, too. Because it reflects a level of intolerance that I think is not just impolite, but it's dangerous. I think that the words that were used to describe Mitt Romney's religion might very well have been used in the same way to describe Christianity in first century Corinth. Exactly the same. There are differences in the way Christians express themselves. We call them denominations: Catholic, Presbyterian, Disciples, Baptist, Methodist, what have you. And those differences are distinct in their own way. There's a lot of overlap. There are differences between a Baptist understanding of Christianity and a Mormon understanding of Christianity. Intolerance creeps in when those differences become placed on a hierarchy. When a distinction and a difference is placed in the context of, well, mine's better, yours isn't, yours is wrong, mine's right, well, we very soon see a level of defensiveness that causes contention. My own work, my own research work on the correlation between religious rigidity and violence in the home takes this to the next level. And of course, if you turn the heat up on it as high as it will go, you have terrorism. Back it all down to where you and I interact. We attend this church because it makes sense to us. The understanding and interpretation of the gospel as it's found here is useful. Other people attend other churches in this town and across the country for the same reason. There's really no purpose to be achieved. And by the way, I'm not as good at this as I sound like I should be. Placing those distinctions on hierarchies. All things are lawful. The minister of First Baptist in Dallas is probably not at any greater or lesser level of eternal peril for having taken a shot at Mitt Romney's religion. It's just not helpful to do that. What's helpful is to take the message of the gospel as we understand it and put it into practice in ways that build up rather than tear down. what's helpful? Civility, tolerance, generosity. I'm going to be in my hometown in a couple of weeks, and I've made plans to probably go out to dinner with my family. And my dad and I are going to do this little dance at the end of the day when the dinner check comes. He's going to want it. I'm going to want it. I still can't pick up the check when my dad's at the table. Because. Now, I fixed him a year or so ago. I excused myself from the table after the meal had more or less ended, and I grabbed the wait person and I said, "This is the credit card you use." I snuck the credit card to him. And my dad sort of laughed it off, but he was sort of hurt by that because he was not able to be generous in a way that befits what a dad feels like he should be. I'm going to let him pick up the tab because, in a way, it's a way for me to be generous as well, emotionally generous, to someone who, to whom I will defer. Now, take that little individual thing. What's generosity about as we are people of God and as we relate to one another through the church? I heard a riddle the other day. Do you know the difference between a tip and a tithe? Tithe is only 10%. Isn't it interesting that the biblical standard for generosity is half what a reasonable tip is to a member of a restaurant staff? More interesting than that to me is, on average, Americans' generosity in terms of charitable giving is typically less than 2% of income. Now, all of us have a level of generosity that's a part of our personal lives. And all of us, I think, would like to find a way to become more generous, whether that is to a church, to an organization, to the food bank, however it works. Well, I learned something way back when I went to a stewardship seminar in seminary. Let's just presume for a moment that the biblical standard of the tithe is something of a goal. Maybe some have reached that, maybe some wish to go beyond, some are on the way. Let's imagine that at the start of a time when you're reflecting on what's my level of generosity going to be in this way? You calculate what it is. Well, it turns out it's maybe 4% of your income. That would be great. Well, what if next year 4% became 5%? Just by 1% of income, incrementally increased generosity. And even if you're starting at zero in 10 years, you're a tither. 1% more generous will change the world. It will change the world. It will be helpful in ways that you cannot begin to imagine. Is it lawful to contribute nothing to charity? Sure, it's just not very helpful. What's helpful? Civility, tolerance, generosity. And it highlights, I think, what is the most important distinction for us to make as church people living our lives here and now. The salvation story is God's work. Our job in the meantime, given that we are free to choose how to live, and even when our choices cause us problems or others pain, we are forgiven all the time, every time. Our job is to be helpful. Civility, tolerance, generosity, these things. Amen.